We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, entitled Creation of the Universal Form, text number 32. Visho Vartanta Tasyor War,
Visho Vartanta Tasyor War,
Loka Vritti Karir Vibhoho,
Loka Vritti Karir Vibhoho,
Vaishyastat Udbhavo Vartam,
Vaishyastat Udbhavo Vartam,
Nirnamya Samavartayat,
Nirnamya Samavartayat,
Vishaha,
Vishaha,
means of living by production and distribution.
Means of living by production and distribution.
Avartanta,
Avartanta,
generated.
Generated.
Tasya,
Tasya,
his.
His.
The gigantic forms.
Urvoho,
Urvoho,
from the thighs.
Loka vritti karihi, means of livelihood. Vibhoho, of the Lord. Vaishyaha, the mercantile community. Tat,
Tat,
there.
Udbhavaha,
orientation.
Vatma,
Vartam, means of living. Nirnam, of all men. Yaha, one who. Samavartayat, executed. The means of livelihood of all persons, namely production of grains and their distribution of to the prajas, was generated from the thighs of the Lord's gigantic form. The mercantile men who take charge of such execution are called Vaishyas. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Human society's means of living is clearly mentioned here as Visha, or agriculture and the business of distributing agricultural products, which involves transport, banking, etc. Industry is an artificial means of livelihood, and large-scale industry especially is the source of all the problems of society. In Bhagavad Gita, also the duties of Vaishya who are engaged in Visha are stated as cow protection, agriculture and business. We have already discussed that a human being can safely depend on the cow and agriculture land for his livelihood. The exchange of produce by banking and transportation is a branch of this type of living. The Vaishyas are divided into many subsections. Some of them are called Krishi or land owners. Some are called Krishana or land tillers. Some of them are called Tilavanik or grain raisers. Some are called Gandhavanik or merchants in spices, and some are called Suvarnavanik or merchants in gold and banking. The Brahmanas are the teachers and spiritual masters. The Kshatriyas protect the citizens from the hands of thieves and miscreants, and the Vaishyas are in charge of production and distribution. The Shudras, the unintelligent class of men who cannot act independently in any of the above mentioned activities, are meant for serving the three higher classes for their livelihood. Formerly, the Brahmanas were given all the necessities of life by the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas because they had no time to spend making a living. The Kshatriyas would collect taxes from the Vaishyas and Shudras, but the Brahmanas were exempt from paying income tax or land revenue. That system of human society was so nice that there were no political, social and economic upheavals. The different castes or varnas classifications are therefore essential for maintaining a peaceful human society. Om Gyanatimranjasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam సాద్వైతం సవధూతం పరిజన సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ పాదాన్ సహగణ లలిత శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితంశ్చ హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పదే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంత రాధాకాంత నమోస్తుతే తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగీ రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరి వృషభానుసుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంఛకల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే భూతైర్మహాద్భిర్య ఇమా పురో విభూ నిర్మాయ శేతే యదమూష పురుష భుంక్తే గుణాన్ షోడశ షోడశాత్మక సోలంకృషీష్ట భగవాన్ వచాంసి మే హరే కృష్ణ. This verse is very relevant to the current society because we are acting exactly opposite to what is mentioned in this verse. Because this verse is giving an idea about the social structure and the origin of the social structure. So the origin of the social structure is not social progress as we may think. It is not part of the human progression that had taken place over the years. But it is from the gigantic form of the universal form. So it has already been ordained by the Supreme Lord that how the social structure should be. So that's why we have the four classification, that is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra. Even though such classification is practically extinct in this world, it's not there anymore. So we can see here a proper human society with a proper classification according to the varna and ashram. And in this specific verse, the stress is given on the varna. Why varna is so important? In other words, why occupational duties are so important? Because after all, we are not yet transcendental. So if you look back into Satyuga, there was only one varna present. And that varna was called Hamsa. Hamsa, there is only one varna, Eka varna, that was Hamsa. Hamsa means they were swan-like devotees. Their only interest was in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the reason the Satyuga is also called Krita Yuga, Krita. Krita means it is coming from the word Krit, to perform the duties. And Krita, they had already performed the duties in connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that time is gone. And now in Kali Yuga, it's not Krita. Everything is Akrita. Nothing is performed. And in other words, everything is performed upside down. Everything is topsy-turvy. So there is no hope in terms of Varnashram in the current society. That's why if you see Bhagavad Gita or this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, it can look like a bit alien to us. Why such a system was present. So it again comes to the previous point that I made, that we are not yet transcendental. So we need this Varnashram. We are affected by our job. We are affected by our current material situation. Isn't it right? Our sadhana, does it depend on our routine? Yes, many people are working here. So isn't it right? Your sadhana is dependent on your work. The nature of the work, the type of the work, and how many hours one is spending at work. So it is dependent. It shows that we are not yet transcendental. So one who is transcendental, he can always see Krishna, he can always chant the names of Krishna, no matter where he is. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's a pure devotee, but he was working very hard for the British government. Even though for a few hours, very efficiently he used to work. But he was a Paramahamsa. But here we can't find so many Hamsas. So we need such kind of a Varnashram. And that's why Even in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, it was recommended the worship of the demigods and following the Varnashram Dharma so that, okay, pacify, satisfy the demigods, get what is necessary and then continue with the life. So it was a mutual arrangement between the human society and the demigods. So now for us, since we are completely affected by our occupation and people don't know what they are actually, people are mixed up. Have you noticed? People do a course, they study for some time, probably accounting. At the end of the accounting, or maybe after finishing 2 years, they come to a conclusion, I'm not an accountant. Then they go for a science degree. And they won't even finish that. Then they finally understand, you know, they are a cook. So they go something like that. So if you see current society, if you see the students, for example, they will be doing one course, they will be dropping that course, then doing something else, they'll be going on. And there are some people who pursue a career for many years. So this is an example of a professor in America in one of the universities. He was a professor. So you can imagine, you won't become a professor in his 20s. Even late 30s or in 40s, one would become a professor. Till then, you know, they had to be, you know, associate professor or assistant professor or a lecturer or a senior lecturer. So he pursued his academia for a long time. And he became a professor, in probably in a mechanical or, you know, some engineering field. And at the end, he came to a conclusion that this is not what I want to do. He came to a conclusion, no, I'm in a wrong field. He said, my hand has to be dirty. You know, you know, some people have that feeling, you know, if I work, my hands have to be dirty. So because he's showing his caliber, he's showing that he's actually a Shudra. It's okay, there's no problem with that. There's nothing wrong in it. So he said, you know, I want to actually go to a garage. I want to work on machines. I want to work on cars, repairing cars, you know, motorcycles, and in all different kinds of, you know, racing bikes. So he actually changed his profession from being a professor to a mechanic. And he even wrote a book that how he's enjoying his new profession. You know, when the grease, you know, is, you know, sticking into his hand, he's feeling so much of joy. So that was his conclusion. There's nothing wrong in it. It is fine, perfectly fine. But this is how people are. Why such a drastic change? First, there is no clear classification in the age of Kali Yuga. Because people are mixed up. Some element of a people is Brahminical and some part is like a Shudra. So people realize their own tendencies in due course of time. And in this situation, what can we do? Yeah, we need to choose an occupation, first of all, which can avoid sinful activities. And we have some kind of tendency towards that. So people choose such an occupation and continue with their occupation. Then Varnashram defines how to act in the society, how to connect to everyone, and how to connect to the Supreme Lord, ultimately. So when it is already preset how to act in an occupation, in relation to others, then it actually removes a lot of burden from the mind. You understand? So if you see ancient social system, if somebody is a blacksmith, for example, you know, even 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 generations back, they were also blacksmiths. So I am from a blacksmith family, people say. So from the childhood, they are trained in that particular trade. And, you know, by the time they finish their teens, about their, you know, 20s, they know what they're going to do. And there is no unemployment. Because as Srila Prabhupada mentions in this purport, factory means instead of producing what is necessary for the society locally, everything became bulk manufacturing, including agriculture. So If a town or a village, if they need a certain kind of grains and fruits and vegetables, previously they used to grow them in different villages. Rather, they started big farming, where they will focus only on one particular product, potatoes. So the whole farm, in acres and hectares of land, just growing potatoes. And someone else would grow something else. So when it comes to what is needed, they had to depend on other part of the world. Now if you see, whatever vegetables we use or one of the fruits or grains, it is coming from many other parts of the world. Some are coming from Asia, some from India, you know, so many different parts of the world. Some from America. So from local manufacturing, everything became very complicated. So agriculture became just like a bulk manufacturing unit. So it includes heavy transportation. It's not just like a simple transportation. You know, it's like, you know, thousands and thousands of kilometers food is being transported. So it requires so much of effort. It requires so much of money. So everything became too complicated. So previously society was simple and it was efficient to meet the living, and people could focus on higher aspects of life. That was spiritual life. Srila Prabhupada says that the farmers, they would work for 3 to 4 months in 1 year. 3 to 4 months. In that they would be able to produce what is necessary for rest of the year. And what they had excess, they would do barter and they would get other necessary vegetables or grains or whatever is necessary. Now that has been changed. People have to work so hard, and there is genetically modified seeds. So if you consider most of the food, it's all genetically modified. If you sow the seeds and if you have a produce, you can't use the same seed to produce further. They had to again depend on multinational companies to get the new seeds, even for, and people, even farmers in India at one point were committing suicide. There was a heavy suicide rate in farmers in India because they couldn't meet the both the ends together. It was so hard. So this is the scenario at this world, and that's why Varnashram was intact in previous ages, and people didn't have to worry too much about their living. So they could focus on the spiritual life. So the ashram side was strong. Since Varna was strong, ashram was also strong. So ashram is a shelter for spiritual advancement. So Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, these 4 ashrams, they were strong because Varna, there was no complication in terms of Varna. So Grihasthas were strong. So they were supporting all other 3 ashrams. So things were in shape. But in Kali Yuga, everything is gone. It's completely upside down, as you know. Who is controlling the society? Politicians. But who is controlling the politicians? Shudras are controlling the politicians. Even the politicians have Shudra nature. And actual Shudras and Vaishyas are controlling the politicians. Because where the money is coming for the campaign, the election campaign, it is coming from the Vaishyas. So they have Vaishyas and Shudras, they are controlling. And they are not even really Vaishyas, so they are actually Shudras. They don't have the Vaishya qualities. Vaishya means they are ready to support Brahminical culture. That is Vaishya. Their main inclination is to make money and to distribute money. They are happy to give donations. That is Vaishya, not just to hoard money, just to accumulate all the wealth. That's not really a Vaishya mentality. They are inclined to give in charity. So that Vaishyas are not there. So Shudras, who are like Vaishyas or even less, they are like Vaishyas. They are controlling the politician. They are controlling the administration. So things are upside down. Brahmanas are not there anymore. And Srila Prabhupada wanted us to become Brahmanas. He wanted us to develop Brahmanical qualities and to act as Brahmanas and to guide the society in our own capacity. Srila Prabhupada wanted that. Even that's why Srila Prabhupada said, I want to create Brahmanas, I want to create heads for the society. So this is the scene where we are in. And ISKCON as a society is trying to create Brahmanas and trying to uphold Varnashram to some degree. So in ashram system is there to some degree now, we can see. And Varna, it is quite difficult, but there is some attempt to develop this Varnashram system in a way which is applicable to the current society. If you want the exact Varnashram system as we had in the Vedic ages, it is an impossible task. It is mission impossible. It's not possible. Why? Because for that, there has to be an empowered king, an empowered administrator to facilitate the whole Varnashram system. So in the previous lineage, there were representatives of Manu who were ruling the world, and they were empowered to establish Varnashram. So that is not there. So it is not possible to have Vedic Varnashram in this world. It is an impossible task. But a Varnashram system which is conducive to the current age and for the devotional practice could be established. So that was the aim of Srila Prabhupada. So that is the aim of our society, to have that varnashrama system which is practical to the current needs. And actual varnashrama system, the Vedic varnashrama system, will start only after this Kali Yuga, because the son of Manu, you know, coming from the lineage of Brahma, is hiding somewhere in India, in a place called Kalapa in Himalayas. So he's hiding, he's still there. So when this Kali Yuga finishes, he will come out and he will create progeny and he will actually continue on with the Satyuga. So that is the time actually Vedic Varnashram would be established in future. So till then, at least for the next 10,000 years, we need a kind of Varnashram which is applicable to this society and conducive for devotional practice. So we are looking forward for that. So that is the beginning tasks are happening, but it's not yet successful. And today is the appearance of Sri Advaita Acharya. So it's a very auspicious day. So we know in the Panchatattva, one of the important personalities is Sri Advaita Acharya. Right? Advaita Acharya, we don't have the deity of Advaita Acharya, but when we go to Sri Dhammayapur, we have Panchatattva and we can see the beautiful form of Sri Advaita Acharya. So today we will discuss a little bit of glories of Sri Advaita Acharya. In fact, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Adilila, there is one chapter dedicated to glorify Sri Advaita Acharya. So I will read the first verse from that chapter, which is in glorification of Sri Advaita Acharya. Interestingly, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, every chapter starts with a very wonderful verse in Sanskrit, because many of the verses in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is in Bengali, but opening verses of all the chapters are in Sanskrit. So Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami profoundly summarizes and glorifies that chapter with a beginning verse, which is very profound. So in this regard, in the Adilila, in the sixth chapter, which is about the glories of Sri Advaita Acharya, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes this verse. Vandetam Srimad Advaita Acharyam Adbhuta Cheshtitam Yasya Prasadat Atnyopi Tas Swarupam Nirupayet. It's a very beautiful verse. I offer my respectful obeisances to Sri Advaita Acharya, whose activities are all wonderful. By his mercy, even a foolish person can describe his characteristics. So this is our position. So we don't have any qualification at all to describe the glorious character or activities of Sri Advaita Acharya. But by the mercy of Sri Advaita Acharya, we can try to describe a little bit about Sri Advaita Acharya. Who is he? What is his glorious activities are? So as you know, Sri Advaita Acharya appeared much before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we can see his painting or his murti. He is quite elderly, and he had this beautiful beard flowing, you know, probably grayish hair, and you know, an elderly person. So who is this Advaita Acharya? Advaita Acharya is, first of all, he's an acharya. He's an acharya in teaching devotional service. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the whole purpose of his appearance is to teach the conditioned souls about the highest aspect of devotional service. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come to teach not just the preliminary stages of devotional service, but to establish the highest aspects of devotional service. So we need to understand a little bit about the background of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his appearance. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the beginning verses, it is very nicely explained. Because the beginning verses are considered the seed verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita is based on these seed verses, the Bija verses, the Bija shlokas. So it is mentioned, അനർപ്പിത ചരീൻചിരാ കരുണയ അവതീർണക്കലോ സമർപ്പയിതും ഉന്നതോജ്വല രസാംസ ഭക്തിശ്രീയാം ഹരിപുരത സുന്ദര ദിതി കദംബ സന്ദീപത സമാം ഹൃദയകന്തരെ സ്ഫുരത്തു വ സച്ചിനന്ദന. സോ ശ്രീ ചൈതന്യ മഹാപ്രഭു അപ്പിയേർഡ് ടു ഗിവ് സംതിങ് വിച്ച് ഹാഡൻ ബീൻ ബെസ്റ്റോഡ് ഫോർ സച്ച് എ ലോങ് ടൈം. അനർപ്പിത ചരീം ചിരാ ഫോർ സച്ച് എ ലോങ് ടൈം ദിസ് പ്യുവർ ഡിവോഷൻ സർവീസ് ഹാസ് ബീൻ ബെസ്റ്റോഡ് ഫോർ യു നോ യുഗാസ് പ്രാക്ടിക്കലി സ്പീക്കിംഗ്. ആൻഡ് ഔട്ട് ഓഫ് കമ്പാഷൻ ശ്രീ ചൈതന്യ മഹാപ്രഭു അപ്പിയേർഡ് ടു ടീച്ച് that most confidential devotional service unto Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So before the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had his associates and he had his entourage ready to invite him and to enact his pastimes. So one of the great associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Sri Advaita Acharya. And who is Sri Advaita Acharya? Advaitacharya is none other than Mahavishnu. So it is mentioned, this Mahavishnu who is lying in the Karna ocean, and from his body millions and millions of universes emanates, that Mahavishnu, he appeared as Advaitacharya. So it is mentioned, the Garbhodakashayi Vishnu who is lying in each and every universe, and there are millions and trillions of universes in which Garbhodakashayi Vishnu is present, these Garbhodakashayi Vishnus are only an expansion of Sri Advaitacharya. So that is the glory of Advaitacharya. So that Mahavishnu appeared as Advaitacharya and he was disgusted with the pathetic situation of this world. Seeing the materialistic people who are averse to devotional service, Advaitacharya became so remorseful and he was crying out for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is mentioned that when Advaitacharya, when he would cry and he would request the Supreme Lord for his appearance, his sound would actually go beyond the ocean. He would go beyond the material coverings and he would go to the Vaikuntha and he would go to the Golok Vrindavan. That was the tumultuous sound of the cryings of Advaitacharya out of compassion for the conditioned souls. So Advaitacharya read this particular verse from Padma Puran. When he read this verse, he became ecstatic because he found the key for his success. So there are many seminars, you know, key to your success. That is primarily for the material success. But Advaitacharya found, okay, this is the key. This is the key through which I can bring the Supreme Personality of Godhead to this world so that all these materialistic people would eventually become devotees of Krishna. And this verse was that just by tulasidala matrena, just by offering tulasidala, by offering just tulasi and water of Ganges with devotion to the Supreme Lord would become completely purchased by such a devotee. So when he heard this verse, he became completely ecstatic and he was completely determined that I would do this straight away so that I can bring Krishna to this world. I can bring Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this material world. So he had his Saligram Shila and he went and collected water from Ganges and he collected Tulsi leaves and he offered with love and devotion to his Saligram Shila. Tulsi, he bathed the Shila with Ganges water and offered Tulsi leaves. Like when we worship Saligram, it is part of our practice to offer Ganges water. How? We have mantras to make the water Ganges water. You know, Ganga cha Yamuna cheva, Kodavari Saraswati, Narmade Sindhu Kaveri, Jalesmin Sannidhim Kuru. So we pray, we offer this mantra and we offer the mudra and we invite all the holy rivers to appear in this water and make them the holy water. So it becomes the holy water. It has the holy water from all the rivers. And then we offer to Saligram Shila. Then one of the essential part of worship, if nothing is there, we can offer the Lord with all the upacharas. If nothing is there, at least we should offer this holy water and we should offer chandan and tulsi. This is the minimal worship. So for example, in home worship of Saligram Shila, one may not have offering all the panjamritas for Abhishek. We may not be offering Madhupaka to, if I said, drink for the Lord. We may not have all these upacharas. But the minimal requirement is bathe the Lord with holy water, offer tulsi and chandan. So this is considered minimal. It's the essential item of worship. So Advaitacharya was worshipping this Saligram Shila with minimal worship. He was not offering all different opulent items. He was offering the simple worship, just with Ganges water and tulsi leaves. And after offering, Advaitacharya was calling out for the Supreme Lord for his appearance. So his cry went even piercing the Viraja River. It actually cut through all the layers of the material universe and it went to Vaikuntha. It went to the Supreme Lord himself. And then the Lord decided to come. So the whole reason for appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the request, earning request of Sri Advaitacharya. So then Mahaprabhu decided to descend to this world. So as we know, even Advaitacharya couldn't understand when the Lord appeared. He actually felt that the Lord has appeared. He cried out in ecstasy at the appearance time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grew up, he couldn't really understand he is the Supreme Lord. Only at one point, he could actually understand that Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. That time, Advaitacharya told Mahaprabhu, "Finally, I caught you. I caught you. Now I know who you are." See, so if you see Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is such a beautiful dealings between Sri Advaitacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always treated Advaitacharya as his senior. Because who is the guru of Sri Advaitacharya? Madhavendra Puri. And who is the guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Isharapuri. So he is actually Isharapuri's godbrother. So Mahaprabhu wanted to treat Advaitacharya as his own guru. Whereas Advaitacharya, he knew who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is the Supreme Lord. So he wanted to worship Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never allow. So there are many pastimes in this regard. So one time in Jagannath Puri, Advaitacharya was there. And Advaitacharya wanted to worship the Supreme Lord. So what he did, he took some flowers, he took some chandan, and he actually ran to his house. He ran to the house of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then when Mahaprabhu opened the door, Mahaprabhu immediately, Advaitacharya took this chandan and flowers and he applied on his forehead, on his lotus feet, and he just chanted this mantra, a Vedic mantra. Yosi sosi namostate. So it's interesting. Yosi sosi namostate. Meaning, whoever you are, you are. And I pay obeisances unto you. So, in one respect, he was not revealing the glory of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Whoever you are, okay? So, it is hidden meaning. In other words, okay, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is you. That is you, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he immediately took something and he applied on the forehead and on the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? Whatever remnants of flowers he had, he actually took and he applied and offered to Sri Advaitacharya. And Advaitacharya always wanted to be chastised by Mahaprabhu because he was thinking, why? You know, Mahaprabhu is chastising so many of his servants, but he is not chastising us. He is not chastising me. This is the position of great personalities. For example, Advaitacharya is Mahavishnu and he wanted to enjoy the sweet mellow of being a servant of the servant. Can you see? If someone chastises us, we go emotional. We may even cry. We may feel upset. We may even not talk to that person for a few days. And if we talk, we may have grudge in our mind. Why did he correct me? After all, I'm doing everything perfectly. You know, I had maybe one mistake was there, maybe there. But why did he correct me? I can't even correct myself. Why did he correct me? That is our mentality. And we cannot even take correction from, even if our spiritual master, even our spiritual master chastises us, still we find it difficult to handle. Now, think about the position of Sri Advaita Acharya, who is Mahavishnu. From his body, unlimited universes are coming forth. He wanted to be chastised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one day, he went to Mahaprabhu and he started speaking Mayavad philosophy. And he continuously spoke Mayavad philosophy. And at one point, Mahaprabhu, initially he didn't chastise, at one point he chastised Advaita Acharya. So he became so ecstatic. So that, you know, I finally got chastised by Mahaprabhu. So this was the mood in which Advaita Acharya was serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita Acharya was so ecstatic. See, we had to understand, when Mahavishnu comes, he's enjoying the mellow of being a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One day Mahaprabhu, Advaita Acharya, Advaita Acharya was sitting and he was serving. Sorry, Mahaprabhu was sitting and he was serving. Advaita Acharya was serving Mahaprabhu. So he was in ecstasy. We know the pastime where Nityananda Prabhu and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were honoring prasadam in the house of Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya cooked so many kinds of preparations, you know, thousands of preparations, and in unlimited quantity, and he was serving so much to Mahaprabhu, so much to Nityananda Prabhu. And Mahaprabhu was telling, I am a sannyasi. How can you feed me so much of prasadam? You know, I have to control my senses. And Advaita Acharya, he would give more and more. And Nityananda Prabhu, on the same token, he would eat a little bit, and what he would say, he will finish and he will say, I was fasting for past 2-3 days, and I came here to break my fast, and you are giving me so, you know, such a small quantity of prasadam that it is not even, it's aggravating my hunger. It's not actually, you know, diminishing my hunger, it's aggravating my hunger. So what kind of a brahmana are you? And he actually threw some prasadam and it fell on Advaita Acharya's body. And Advaita Acharya started dancing in ecstasy because it is a remnant from Nityananda Prabhu. So this is the, you know, this is how they were intimately connected. And Nityananda Prabhu said, you are a defame for the whole Brahmaniket class because you are inviting sannyasis and, you know, you are feeding and you are not giving sufficient food. So Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they were speaking in completely opposite way. And Advaita Acharya was enjoying pastimes with such supreme lords together. So this is, you know, this is Advaita Acharya. He was enjoying being the servant of the Supreme Lord. So the appearance of Mahaprabhu was due to the devotion of Advaita Acharya. He brought Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this mortal world. And he took part in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. We know even in Mahaprakash Leela, you know, Advaita Acharya was part of the Mahaprakash Leela when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was with all his associates. So that's the time Mahaprabhu showed his opulence to everyone. He publicly, not publicly, but he revealed his identity to all his intimate associates. So that is the glory of Mahaprakash Leela. In Mahaprakash Leela, how did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reciprocate to Advaita Acharya? It's very interesting. Who is the first person to get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mahaprakash Leela? Anyone knows? Who is the first person to get mercy of Sri Mahaprabhu in Mahaprakash Leela? Anyone knows? No. Yeah? It is a very instructional that who got the mercy of Mahaprabhu in the Mahaprakash Leela. So Mahaprakash Leela took place when if I'm right, it is Srivast Thakur's house, right? In Srivast Thakur's house, when Srivast Thakur was completely in fear because the Nawab had ordered to stop the Sankirtan movement and to break all the mridangas. So Srivast Thakur was in complete anxiety and he was at his place, closed the door, and that night, Mahaprabhu went to Srivast Thakur's house and he started knocking on the door. Not just knocking, banging on the door. So Srivast Thakur became completely fearful and Srivast Thakur said, you know, how can I open the door? Who is this? He was completely afraid that this Nawab had sent his soldiers to come and destroy his altar and his mridanga. So he was completely in fear. But Mahaprabhu said, it is me. I am Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Open the door. Otherwise, I will break the door. Srivas just banging on the door. Then Srivas Thakur opened the door. When he opened the door, Mahaprabhu was in a completely different mood. Generally, Mahaprabhu didn't want to give up his mood as a devotee. You know, we know even the pranam mantra. Panchatattvatmakam krishnam bhakta rupa surupakam bhaktavataram bhaktakhyam pranami bhakti shaktikam. So Mahaprabhu, the five features in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, one is bhaktavataram. One is bhaktavataram. He came as bhaktavatar, as a devotee of the Lord. So he didn't want to give up that mood of being a devotee. So even in Vrindavan, when devotees would address him as Vishnu, Mahaprabhu, he would close his ears and chant, you know, Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu. I am not Vishnu, you know, just, you know, you are just contaminating me. So this was the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even in Navadvipa pastime, he was carrying the mood of being a devotee of the Lord, searching for Krishna. However, when he appeared in the house of Srivas Thakur, he completely changed. He said, where is the altar? So Srivas Thakur, in a fear, because he hadn't seen Mahaprabhu in this form, he said, okay, this is the altar. He went and sat, he removed, and he removed the deities, and he sat right in the middle of the altar. Then Mahaprabhu's associates came, and he said, now you worship me. He roared like a lion, and he was sitting just like Vishnu. And then there was the big worship of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's what we sing in the 7 o'clock arati. What is that? What is that? Kibba? Gaurachante. Yeah. So if you see the different verses, different lines of Gaurarati, we can see everyone is, you know, who is blowing the conch shell, somebody is singing, someone is fanning Mahaprabhu. So the whole worship was going on. People were bringing so many bhogas, so many pots of Ganges water. So the whole worship was going on, and being satisfied with the worship of different devotees, Mahaprabhu started bestowing mercy of pure devotion service unto his devotees. And the first one to receive mercy of Mahaprabhu was none other than the servant of Srivas Thakur, the maid servant of Srivas Thakur. It was not any of his associates. It was not his parents or brother or no one, none. But the servant or the maid servant of Srivas Thakur, and her name was Dukhi. So she was carrying, because she was assisting in Srivas Thakur in worshipping Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu became completely happy. Seeing this, assisting his pure devotees, Mahaprabhu became so happy and said, now onwards you will become not Dukhi, you become Sukhi. Because you will get prema for Krishna. So Dukhi got Krishna prema straight away. And she was crying for Krishna. And all the devotees were completely went into ecstasy seeing Dukhi in love of Godhead. And when it came to the turn of Sri Advaita Acharya, so since it is the appearance of Advaita Acharya, we are trying to glorify Sri Advaita Acharya, let's see how Mahaprabhu reciprocated unto Advaita Acharya. He told many devotees many stories how Mahaprabhu personally appeared in their life and how he protected them in the time of need. So he told Advaita Acharya that I know you even before my appearance. I know you from such a long time. You used to study Bhagavad Gita every day. We had to understand Advaita Acharya was daily studying Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so we should also study Bhagavad Gita. Advaita Acharya, Mahavishnu, from whose body the universes are emanating, he was studying Bhagavad Gita every day. Okay, Advaita Acharya was studying Bhagavad Gita every day, and he used to discuss Bhagavad Gita, and he used to bring devotional commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. Because at that time, there were many Mayavadis, there were many impersonalists, there were many atheists. Either they misinterpreted Bhagavad Gita or they didn't believe at all in Bhagavad Gita. Whereas Sri Advaita Acharya would bring the devotional meanings to Bhagavad Gita. So his practice was that if there are verses in Bhagavad Gita which may look like impersonal, but the real meaning has to be devotional. So Advaita Acharya had this strong faith that all the verses of Bhagavad Gita is talking about the personalist philosophy. And if he couldn't derive that meaning out of any of the verses of Bhagavad Gita, he would fast that night. And he would pray to the Krishna and he would just fast. He wouldn't eat anything till he get the right meaning. So this was the practice of Advaita Acharya. So all the time he could actually get the right meaning of Bhagavad Gita. He could actually understand the personal meaning of Bhagavad Gita. He was going on. But he came upon this particular verse from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sarvada pani padam yat sarvatokshi shiromukham sarvada shrunuman loke sarva mavartya tishtati. When he read this verse, Advaita Acharya got bewildered. How is it possible for the Supreme Lord, who is a person who is situated in Golok Dham, be sarvada pani padam yat? Sarvada Pani means he has his Pani and Padam. He has his hands and legs everywhere. And Sarvadokshi Chiromukham. Sarvada, everywhere he has Akshi. He has his eyes. Shira, he has his head. Mukham and his face. Everywhere. Sarvada Shrinuman Loke, Sarva Mavarti Tashtadi. In that way, this Lord is situated everywhere. So when he read this verse, Advaita Acharya thought, how is it possible that a personal form be having unlimited hands, unlimited legs, unlimited faces, and unlimited heads. And he is present everywhere in this form. What kind of form is this? Because even if you consider the universal form as the form of the Lord, still even universal form is for impersonalists. Right? Now we are in the universal form, right? Describing the universal form. So universal form, as we had discussed earlier, has two features. One is the blueprint form, the subtle form of the universal form, from which the gross form comes, which is the gigantic universe that we are seeing, of which the planetary systems are different limbs of the gigantic universal form. So if we consider the universal form as spread everywhere, still it is not really the personal form, because it is made of earth, water, fire, ether, and different material elements. Whereas Krishna's form is Sachidananda Vigraha. So how is it possible? So Advaita Acharya was confused. And he started fasting. He thought, I will not eat anything till I get the right meaning. So he continued the day. He couldn't get the meaning. He was continuing in the night without eating anything and praying to the Lord. And he just went into sleep thinking about this verse. Then, during the night, he had a dream in which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself appeared. And he told, O Acharya, kindly stop your fasting. And kindly get up and kindly break your fast, eat something. And I will tell you the real meaning of this verse. So, Advaita Acharya followed the instruction and then he got the right meaning. And the right meaning was Sarvada Pani Padam. That verse is about Paramatma. And as the Lord is situated everywhere in the Paramatma feature. And that's why he has, so everywhere he has his hands and legs and faces and heads and everything. So in that way, Mahaprabhu revealed the Paramatma feature to Advaita Acharya. And at this point, we have to understand, for us, it looks like a very rudimentary knowledge. Because we know already that, Paramatma is there everywhere. Paramatma has his features everywhere. How do we know everything? Because in the parampara, this knowledge is coming. Srila Prabhupada is bringing this parampara knowledge. So, without any difficulty, we know. Now, if we ask anyone, even a new devotee, okay, where is Paramatma? Everyone will say everywhere. Correct? And Paramatma has his hands and legs, and we may also say, okay, he is the Paramatma, he is Kshirodagashaya Vishnu. Right? How is it possible? Because this parampara knowledge is being revealed by the Supreme Lord unto the heart of the pure devotees. And here, it's not just a pure devotee, but the Supreme Lord himself acting as Acharya. So, these were the kinds of sweet reciprocation between the Supreme Lord and Advaita Acharya. Interestingly, time passed. Advaita Acharya is considered very, very expert in worshipping the deities. Very expert in deity worship. He is considered the ashraya of Pancharatra Vidhi. Pancharatra Ashraya. So we follow the Pancharatra worship to worship the Supreme Lord in the form of the Murti, in the form of the deity. And Adhyasacharya was the Ashraya, he was a shelter for that worship. He knew perfectly how to worship the Supreme Lord in the Archa Vigraha. So one time, Mahaprabhu was performing his final pastimes in Jagannath Puri, and he was with Swarup Damodar Goswami, who was his personal secretary. And at that point, he got a letter from Adhyasacharya. So when he got the letter, Swarup Damodar Goswami opened the letter and Mahaprabhu requested to read out for him. So Swarup Damodar Goswami read this letter, and the letter said that the whole world has become mad and there is no need, there is no demand for rice in the marketplace. So the key point was, there is no demand for rice in the marketplace. So Swarup Damodar Goswami read this, and Mahaprabhu heard this and he said, look, what kind of person is this Adhyasacharya? Advaita, he's a madman. And he's making me mad as well. Look what kind of verse he has written. That there is no, the whole world has become mad and there is no demand for rice in the marketplace. What kind of verse has he written? He's really a madman. Then Swarup Damodar Goswami, he was a bit concerned. Because he could get a hint from this verse. So he asked Mahaprabhu, what is the real meaning of this? So Mahaprabhu replied to Sri Adhyasacharya. He said that Adhyasacharya is an expert in worshipping the deities. So he knows the vidhi, he knows the rules and regulations by which he can invite a deity for worship. And he's expert in carrying forward the worship. And when the worship is over, he's an expert in taking back the deities to where it is meant to be. That's all Mahaprabhu told. Hearing this, Swarup Damodar Goswami became very morose because he could understand the real meaning behind this verse. The meaning behind this verse was that now the world has turned into Krishna, they have taken up to Krishna consciousness, and there is no demand in the rice means people are not materially motivated because they have obtained the purpose of devotional service in terms of Krishna Prem. In that way, people are mad in ecstasy. So, now you have done your job. Mission is successful and now it is a time for you to go back to your abode. So, Sri Adhyasacharya became an instrument in sending Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu back to his abode. So, in bringing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to this material world and enacting pastimes with Mahaprabhu and finally sending the Lord back to the spiritual world, Adhyasacharya played a very important role. So, that is the glory of Sri Adhyasacharya. So, we can meditate upon Adhyasacharya because he is an acharya in delivering, in giving devotional service. So, it is a very auspicious day for us to pray to Adhyasacharya, for us to be sincere in our devotional service as a basic step, to be very sincere in our devotional service, to sincerely chant, to sincerely do the service, sincerely read, starting from Bhagavad Gita. In that way, to make advancement in our spiritual life. And also remember the mood in which Sri Adhyasacharya served Mahaprabhu, being a servant. So, to carry that mood of servitorship in our heart. So this is the things we can actually pray to Sri Adhyasacharya. So I stop here. You see, is there any questions or comments? Yes, there is. As you may know the verse even, in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, the Karabhajana Rishi speaks to King Nimi Krishna Varnam, Dishagrisham, Sangopangastra Parshadam, right? Sangopangastra Parshadam, in which it is mentioned, okay, Krishna Varnam, Dishagrisham is referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sangha Upanga Astra Parshadam. Four things are mentioned. Sangha associates, Upanga confidential companions, one is confidential companions, one is associates, servants, confidential companions, and Astra, and his weapon. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is an associate of Advaita Acharya is an associate, a Sangha of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Parshadam, confidential companions are also there, who are not, may not be very well known, but they are Parshadas, they are actually, again, the Parshadas of Mahaprabhu. Yeah. Yeah. So that is another point also mentioned, that Advaita Acharya also is an expansion of Sadashiva also. Because again, Sadashiva is also Mahavishnu, because Sadashiva is Vishnu Dattva. So in that way. We can see the sequence, you know, Mahavishnu is coming, so. The question is how Varna is determined. So the answer is straightforward, because it's not according to the birth, as we know Srila Prabhupada teaches. One is not a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra just by birth, but according to nature and according to one's occupation. If you see current society, take an example in India, all the parents, they want their children to be, you know, a doctor, engineer, or, you know, lawyer, I don't know, you know, the key occupations, IAS officer, they are practically set their, what their children should be. It is set in their mind, is it right? We have seen, you know, people who do engineering, some of them do the doctor, you know, being a doctor, MBBS or something, they have no inclinations at all for doing such a degree. Some of them even commit suicide because of study pressures, and they can't cope with that. So that is there. So the one thing is, as children, it is the duty of the parents to see the inclinations and nature of that particular child and train in something which is suitable. And when it comes to our devotional service, generally in devotional service also, initially we try out many services. Generally, if it is applicable for everyone, initially one has to try out all the services one can, try everything, and it becomes very obvious that what one is good at, then one may focus more on that, because we are conditioned. On the perfected platform, everything is equal, whatever is needful, all the services are on the equal platform, so one may be able to do different services, you know, perfectly, or, you know, they don't mind doing anything perfectly, but that is fine, that's what it's meant to be. But on a practical level, in due course of time, one does service in which one is more productive, more efficient. So it's just a matter of time one understands. It would be understood by oneself or by the authorities, that where one's strengths are and where one's weakness are. So there will be a balance. It may not be that only one can do services in which one has a strength. One may have to do other things also, but can have a predominance of the service in which his nature actually suits. Like that. So one can feel, and also it can become obvious to others also. Yeah. If somebody is cooking, you know, sabji, you can cook 100 sabjis, but it's horrible. You know, then maybe one should find some other service, you know. Even after trying so much, you know, some people can't properly cook, so try something else. someone try being manager and but get stressed out all the time, then it's a good idea to change the service. It can take some time, but it's a good idea to change the service, to try something else. Can't handle, so one has to see what one is good at. Yes.
Can you please tell us about Advaita in few words? What does Advaita mean?
The word Advaita. I can explain what Advaita means, yeah. But I can't remember in the context of Advaitacharya. If you want that. Advaita, generally, Advaita Machyuta Manadi Mananda Rupam, where Advaita is explained as non-dual, non-different, meaning the body and the soul are one and the same. Both are of spiritual nature. So that is the general meaning of Advaita. And in here, maybe I had to look, is there any specific meaning to Advaitacharya? Okay, I'll read this verse. Since you asked, this is a very good verse. Okay, I'll explain because it's a very good question. I'll read this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, chapter 6, verse number 5. Advaitam harinadvaitat acharyam bhakti shamanat bhaktavataram ishamtam advaitacharyam ashraye. So this actually explains why Advaitacharya is called Advaitacharya. Okay. Because he is known different from Hari. Okay, now you understood the meaning of Advaita. Because Advaitacharya is known different from Hari, so he is called Advaita. So because he is known different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. Okay. You had a final question? Yeah, in the Vedic system, yes, there is a connection between Varna and Ashram. Say, a Brahmana can have Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas Ashrams. Okay? And for Kshatriya can have Brahmacharya, Grahastha and Vanaprastha. Then for Vaishya can have Brahmacharya and Grahastha. And for a Shudra, none. Right? Shudra Grihastha is there, but there is no Brahmacharya. There is no Brahmacharya training, only Grihastha. Is right? No Brahmacharya. No Brahmacharya. It doesn't go to a guru and get trained in Brahmacharya, just Grihastha. So that is a kind of connection. The proof, yeah? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. No questions further? Thank you very much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Advaitacharya Avibhav Mahotsav ki.